Hey, welcome into Positive Light Podcast, where we're bringing a positive influence into this world and into your lives. Hi, I'm Bob Miles, and today's episode is going to be on renewing of your mind. And the best scripture for this is Romans 12, 1 and 2, where it says, "Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and perfect will." And Billy Graham states this on transformation: "He hath made him to be sin for us, that we might be made the righteousness of God," in 2 Corinthians 5:21. Augustine was one of the greatest theologians of all time. He was a wild, intemperate, immoral youth. In spite of his mother's pleadings and prayers, he grew worse instead of better. But one day, he had a personal encounter with Jesus Christ that transformed his life. His restlessness and the practice of sin disappeared. He became one of the greatest saints of all time. John Newton was a slave trader on the west coast of Africa. One day in a storm at sea, he met Jesus Christ. He went back to England and became an Anglican clergyman. He wrote scores of hymns, one of which has become the modern popular song Amazing Grace. This is what Christ can do for anyone who puts his trust in Him. So how do we have lasting change in our life? Well, Rick Warren states, if you want to have lasting change in your life, you need to refocus your mind. Specifically, you need to change your thought pattern away from what you don't want to focus on and toward what you do want to focus on, because whatever you focus on is what you move toward. So Rick Warren also states that Romans 12, 1 and 2 gives us a blueprint to change our thought patterns. Do not conform. How often do we let other people shape our lives? God doesn't want you to be like someone else. He wants you to be the person He made you to be. So don't copy, don't conform, don't try to be like anyone else. The pattern of this world. Pattern means the model of everything you've learned in life. If you want to change, you have to change your pattern or model of living that you've learned in your life. You need to replace the old, unhealthy pattern with a new one modeled after the life of Christ. So we need to be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Transformed is the same as the word we use for metamorphosis, the process a caterpillar goes through to become a butterfly. In the same way, God wants to transform you into a completely new person by renewing your mind. How does this happen? The Bible tells us in Ephesians 4:22-24, to put your old self, which is being corrupted by its deceitful desires, to be made new in the attitude of your minds, and to put on the new self, created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness. This means you are going to have to do something, some putting off, and you are going to have to do some putting on. And the putting off has to happen before the putting on. It's just like trying on clothes in a department store. Before you can try on the new stuff, you have to take off the old stuff. You're going to have to let go of the old attitudes, the old thought patterns, the old images that you've been living with, so you can put on the new garments God has for you. You have two choices in life. You'll either be conformed or transformed. There's no middle ground. Just ask Daniel. Daniel's faced a choice. Either he could take the king's food and be conformed to the ways of the Babylon Empire, or he could refuse to defile his body and stay true to his values. Daniel stayed strong. He never forgot who he was. He said, "You can change my address, you can change my clothing, you can change my name, but you're not going to change my heart. I won't be conformed to the ways of this society." Too many of us choose differently than Daniel did. Instead of sticking to our values, we live like everyone else. We conform. But the Bible reminds us, do not conform yourselves to the standards of this world, but let God transform you inwardly by a complete change of your mind. Then you will be able to know the will of God. Again, that's out of Romans 12, 2. I talk to people all the time who can't figure out what God wants them to do with their lives because they're conformed to this world. They're more interested in being like everyone else than in being the unique person that God made them to be. As long as you're worried about conforming, you won't worry about God transforming you. And in that case, you won't know the will of God. But if you make Daniel's choice and choose God's best for your life, he'll transform you. Then you will know the will of God. I'd like to read you a couple of stories that will help you put things into perspective, I hope. The first story is called The Butterfly Story. The man found a cocoon of a butterfly. One day, a small opening appeared. He sat and watched the butterfly for several hours as it struggled to force its body through the little hole. Then it seemed to stop making any progress. It appeared as if it had gotten as far as it could go, and it could go no further. So the man decided to help the butterfly. He took a pair of scissors and snipped off the remaining bit of the cocoon. The butterfly then emerged easily, but it had a swollen body and small shriveled wings. The man continued to watch the butterfly because he expected that at any moment the wings would enlarge and expand to be able to support the body, which would contract in time. Neither happened. In fact, the butterfly spent the rest of its life crawling around with swollen body and shriveled wings, and never was able to fly. What the man, in his kindness and haste, did not understand was that the restricting cocoon and the struggle required for the butterfly to get through the tiny opening were life's way of forcing fluid from the body of the butterfly into its wings, so that it would be ready for flight once it achieved its freedom from the cocoon. Sometimes struggles are exactly what we need in our lives. Remember, nature needs to help, just not no interference. There's our processes of life, things we all go through. The struggles are part of our journey and preparing us for what awaits. They are preparing us to fly. And the next story I'm going to tell you is called The Gift, and really did touch my heart when I read this story. So here it is. Here is a true story about a 9-year-old boy who lived in a rural town in Tennessee. His house was in a poor area of the community. A church had a bus ministry that came knocking on his door one Saturday afternoon. The kid came to answer the door and greeted the bus pastor. The bus pastor asked if his parents were home, and the small boy told him that his parents take off every weekend and leave him at home to take care of his little brother. The bus pastor couldn't believe what the kid said and asked him to repeat it. The youngster gave the same answer, and the bus pastor asked to come in and talk with him. They went into the living room and sat down on an old couch with the foam and the springs exposed. The bus pastor asked the kid, "Where do you go to church?" The young boy surprised the visitor by replying, "I've never been to church in my whole life." The bus pastor thought to himself about the fact that his church was less than 3 miles from the child's house. "Are you sure you haven't never been to church?" he asked again. "I sure haven't," came the answer. Then the bus pastor said, "Well, son, more important than going to church, have you ever heard the greatest love story ever told?" And then proceeded to share the gospel with the little 9-year-old boy. The young lad's heart began to be tenderized, and at the end of the bus pastor's story, the bus pastor asked if the boy wanted to receive his free gift from God. The youngster exclaimed, "You bet." The kid and the bus pastor got on their knees, and the lad invited Jesus into his little heart and received the free gift of salvation. They both stood up, and the bus pastor asked if he could pick up the kid up for church the next morning. "Sure," the 9-year-old boy replied. The bus pastor got to the house early the next morning and found the lights off. He let himself in, snaked his way through the house, and found the little boy asleep in his bed. He woke up the little boy and his brother and helped him get dressed. They got on the bus and ate a donut for breakfast on the way to church. Keep in mind, this boy had never been to church before. The church was a real big one. The little kid just sat there, clueless of what was going on. A few minutes into the service, these tall, unhappy guys walked down to the front and picked up some wooden plates. One of the men prayed, and the kid, with utter fascination, watched them walk up and down the aisles. He still didn't know what was going on. All of a sudden, like a bolt of lightning, it hit the kid what was taking place. These people must be giving money to Jesus. Then he reflected on the free gift of life he had received just 24 hours earlier. He immediately searched his pockets front and back and couldn't find a thing to give Jesus. By the time the offering plate was being passed down his aisle, and with a broken heart, he just grabbed the plate and held on to it. He finally let go and watched it pass on down the aisle. He turned around to see it pass down the aisle behind him, and then his eyes remained glued on the plate as it was passed back and forth, all the way to the rear of the sanctuary. Then he had an idea. This little 9-year-old boy, in front of God and everybody, got up out of his seat. He walked about 8 rows back, grabbed the usher by the coat, and asked to hold the plate one more time. Then he did the most astounding thing I have ever heard of. He took the plate, sat it on the carpeted church floor, and stepped into the center of it. As he stood there, he lifted his little head up and said, "Jesus, I don't have anything to give you today, but just me, I give you me." So next, I'd like to play a song called "Living Sacrifice" by Tommy Walker, and here it is.
Here's my life, a living sacrifice. May all I do bring praises unto you. In light of your unending mercy, in light of your unfailing love, is my life a living sacrifice. This will be my worship, this will be my worship, the way I live, the way I serve. This will be my worship, this will be my worship, the way I live for you. Is my may all I do be praises unto you. In light of your unending mercy, in light of your unfailing love, is my life a living sacrifice for you. This will be my worship, this will be my worship, the way I live, the way I serve. This will be my worship, this will be my worship, the way I live. This will be my worship, this will be my worship, the way I live, oh, the way I serve, Lord. This will be my worship, this will be my worship, the way I live. This will be my worship, Lord, the way I live and the way Lord, the way I serve you. This will be my worship. This will be my worship. The way I live for you. For you.
Hey, what a great song by Tommy Walker. And you can catch Tommy Walker on YouTube. You can subscribe to his channel. You can also get him at TommyWalkerMinistries.org. And the lyrics that I like the best, it says right off the start, it says, "Here's my life, a living sacrifice. May all I do bring praises unto you. In light of your unending mercy, in light of your unfailing love, here's my life, a living sacrifice for you." So Rick Easel states, we need to commit all to Jesus. So let's take a more in-depth look at Romans 12. Jesus has always demanded one's all in following him. He never made an exception. If he ever did, it would have been the time a rich young man came to follow Jesus. Outwardly, the man had all the trappings that would make for a great follower. Inwardly, however, he was holding back. Jesus recognized that. He will not accept a partial commitment. He didn't then, and he doesn't now. The Apostle Paul provides a theological framework for what it means to follow Christ totally and the consequential changes it makes in a person's life. So this should remind you that God expects unconditional surrender, but once made, a metamorphosis takes place that changes a person into the real life they seek. So have you ever done the hokey pokey? It's that little song and dance that tells you to put our left arm or right leg or some other body part of our body into the circle. Shake it and then turn yourself about. It's an active and sometimes tiring little exercise that ends with the command, put your whole self in. When I think of that song and dance, I'm reminded of another instruction. The one is from the Apostle Paul. He writes, "Therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, I urge you to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual worship," out of Romans 12:1. To present your bodies is Paul's way of saying, put your whole self in. The song and dance routine we call worship involves offering our whole person to God, the more difficult than the dance routine. So most of us understand the idea of giving an offering of money at church. There are plates and envelopes, and we put our money or our check in an envelope and drop it in the plate. It represents an acknowledgement of God's blessing in our lives. It represents our commitment to the ministry of the congregation. It is a part of our worship. It is a way in which we open up the windows of heaven so God can bless us even further. It represents, for many, an antidote to materialism. While a few could use some encouragement, most of us understand what it means to make an offering to the church. But all of us, without exception, need some help with the idea of offering ourselves to God to put our whole self in. So we can't put ourselves in an envelope, and we can't climb into the plate when the usher comes by and say, "My offering to God today is myself." Well, unless you're that 9-year-old little boy that I told a story about earlier. Most people do not come into a worship service prepared to give our whole selves over to God. We brought sins that need to be confessed and cleansed before we leave. We brought questions that need answers and problems that need solutions. We brought burdens that need lifted and anxieties that need to be dispelled, and frustration and depression and boredom and preoccupations, all kinds of distractions. May I say that for most of us, it would be easier to take out our checkbook and double our offering and put it in the plate than it would be to turn ourselves over to God. But dare I say that we have not worshiped until we have gotten ourselves to God. Worship is the total commitment of the total person for the total life. Anything less is not genuine worship. Real worship is not merely the offering of an elaborate prayers to God. Neither is it inspiring liturgy or splendid ritual. Nor is it making large donations. Nor is it singing majestic songs of praise or listening to a sermon. Real worship happens when we confess sin, turn from that sin, and then offer ourselves completely and wholeheartedly to God. So would one dare not give themselves wholeheartedly when they encountered the presence of God? Would one not fall at his feet giving him their all if they were caught up in his splendor and holiness? Would one not put their whole self in if they felt the love and power of God Almighty? So we offer ourselves to God because of his mercy. Paul presents God's mercies as his strongest argument for giving ourselves to God. I urge you, Paul said, by the mercies of God to present your bodies, that of Romans 12:1. When we recognize that God has done for us through his Son Jesus Christ, the only response is to give ourselves completely to him. Jesus is the grace giver, the dead raiser, the one who saves us. So we are sinners. That sin is deathly consequences. But while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. He took our place, taking upon himself the consequences and punishment of our sin, so that now there is no condemnation for us. We are saved from the fires of hell to the eternal presence of God. This is an act of grace and mercy. It is the ultimate gift, and never forget it. That should be motivation enough for us to give our whole lives to God. If reflecting on God's mercies doesn't move us, then we are in trouble. Where would we be without God's love and forgiveness? Where would we be without God's presence in our lives? What kind of hope would we have without him? Let's think for a moment about our situations. Consider our family, our friends, our job, and our church. Do we deserve those on merit alone? If we are honest with ourselves, suddenly we begin to realize the wonder of God's mercies. The movie Tender Mercies is about a country western composer and performer who was an alcoholic. He had finally gotten to the place where he couldn't function. His band members left him drunk in a motel in East Texas. He sobered up and got a job in the service station motel where they had dropped him. He came to know the love of a godly woman who introduced him to the God who revealed himself through Jesus Christ. The movie shows him being baptized in the Little East Texas Baptist Church. Then you see the wholeness that comes to his life, the recovery of trust in himself and others, and the reclamation of his gifts. So they named the movie Right, Tender Mercies. The tender mercy of God had rescued him and rebirthed him. He was a new creation. Well, you and I may not write songs, and while our band has not gone off and left us drunk in some motel, the truth is that each of us could have a biography written about ourselves that could be called Tender Mercies. And based on the mercy of God, in view of his grace, we give ourselves to God. That is reason enough. We offer ourselves to God as a living sacrifice. Paul said, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. The expression living sacrifice is set against the backdrop of the Old Testament sacrifices. While the Old Testament worshiper offered an animal, the New Testament worshiper is to offer himself or herself. Just as the people of Israel presented their animal sacrifice to the priest, we are to hand over our bodies to God. Our celebration for what God has done for us through his Son, Jesus Christ. We give ourselves to him. When Paul uses the term body, he is implying the whole person, or the physical means whereby the whole person is expressed. The presentation can be seen in much the same way, that a defeated general of an army would hand over his sword, thereby demonstrating the surrender of his whole being. There were two living sacrifices recorded in the Bible. These two examples gives us a clue as to what it means to offer a living sacrifice. Both were acts of worship. The first was Isaac. He willingly put himself on the altar and would have died in obedience to God's will. But the Lord sent a ram to take his place. Isaac died just that same. He died to self and willingly yielded himself to God's will. When he stepped off the altar, Isaac was a living sacrifice. The second was Jesus. He was the perfect living sacrifice because he actually died as a sacrifice in obedience to God's will. So what does it mean to be a living sacrifice, asked a woman to her pastor? Holding out a blank sheet of paper, the pastor replied, "It is to sign your name at the bottom of this blank sheet and let God fill it in as he wills." That is what Paul had in mind when he instructed the Roman church to offer your bodies as a living sacrifices. We offer ourselves to God all the time. Living implies life. Life is an everyday experience. Offering ourselves to God is not something that should be contained within a 60-minute worship. A living sacrifice is a sacrifice that is alive and continuous in action. This means worship occurs not just in the sanctuary, but in our whole world. This means that worship moves away from just this hour to all the hours of our lives, and it moves away from one activity of coming to worship to all of our activities. Each relationship, each task, each opportunity, each problem, each success, each failure. True worship is our personal linking of faith and works, the offering of everyday life to God, and it isn't something that takes place only in church. Real worship sees the whole world as the temple of the living God, and every common deed is an act of worship. Real worship is the offering of everyday life to God. A person may say, "I'm going to church to worship God," but he or she should also be able to say, "I'm going to the office, the school, the garage, the garden, the field to worship God." To truly know who and how you worship, let me see you in your office. Let me hear you speak in your business affairs. Let me know how you treat your neighbors. Let me know how you earn your money, how you save it, and how you spend it. Worship affects everything we do and everything we are. It never ceases to amaze me that we have developed a kind of selective Christianity that allows us to be deeply and sincerely involved in worship and church activities, and yet almost totally pagan in the day-in, day-out businesses of our lives. And what is even sadder is that most of us never realize that discrepancy. Worship is not just church activity. It is a life activity. Worship is not something, it is an all-the-time occurrence. Worship is not once-a-week event. A.W. Tozer wrote, "If you will not worship God 7 days a week, you do not worship Him on 1 day a week." Sometimes we mistakenly think that we must always withdraw to a church building to worship. Too often we have sought to protect our spirituality by developing a ghetto mentality and a greenhouse environment, but that is not always healthy. Let's not interpret worship as isolation and separation. True worship is offering God's one self and all that one does every day with it, wherever we might be. I love what James Pike said. When someone says, "Oh, I can worship God anywhere," the answer is, "Do you?" We offer ourselves to God through transformation and renewal. We demonstrate our commitment by refusing to conform to this world by being transformed through renewed minds. Paul stated, "Do not be conformed to this age, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may discern what is the good, pleasing, and perfect will of God." Out of Romans 12:2. When we give ourselves to God, it is reflected in how we live. Believers stay in the secular world without being trapped by it and molded by it. We live as holy people, people who are distinct, separated from the ways and the wiles of this world. We live as nonconformist people, people who are not chameleons, that is, people who do not take its being and likeness from its surroundings. We live as transformed people, people who have been metamorphosed on the inside. Worshipping people are changed people. It is reflected in their walk, their talk, and their personality. When we give ourselves to God, we live not as self-centered, but as Christ-centered life. The world seeks to pressure our mind from without, but one who has given themselves wholeheartedly to God allows God's Spirit to release His power from within. So this happens when Christ comes into a person. She becomes a new person. Her mind is different, for the mind of Christ is in her. Rather than allow the world to squeeze us into this mold, we allow Christ to shape us into His likeness. Worship is a molding process. We are to be to Christ as an image is to the original. For example, I don't do the things Jesus would have done. I find myself wanting to do them. I don't go around trying to do right things. I become the right sort of person. The primary goal of worship is transformation. The only way transformation can occur is to give ourselves totally to God so that the mind and power of Jesus Christ can indwell in us. And when that happens, every moment, every activity of life, we are like Jesus. Are you ready to put your whole self into the arms of God? Are you ready to commit your all to Jesus? James Martineau said, "Worship is a free offering of ourselves to God, ever renewed because ever imperfect. It expresses the consciousness that we are His by right, yet we have not duly passed into His hand." Commitment is the giving of all one knows of himself to all one knows of God. Anything less than total commitment is unacceptable to God. Hey, that kind of brings us to the end of the episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. My prayer as always is that God blesses the journey you're on with him and that you embrace the path that he has you on. Next week's episode, it's going to be on being God's messenger. Catch me at positivelightpodcast@gmail.com. I'm also on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Everybody have a great week, and we'll catch you next week.